the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Warner goes past Bradman in the most disrespectful act since the iPhone 11 usurped the iPhone X. But how good a 335 not out was it if Yasir Shah also scored 100? Joe Root is back in the runs in New Zealand, but how good 100 was it if Tom Latham also scored 100? Brian Lara was on the show 2 weeks ago, but how big a get was it if this week we have Richard Cheekwe on the show? Because we do, and he's live in studio. This is all thanks to Budgie Smuggler. Christmas is coming, and our friends at Budgie Smuggler have you covered. Smugglers, towels, bum bags, flap hats, bucket hats, socks, kids' rashies, underwear. When mum or your love interests ask, what do you want for Christmas? You tell her to go to budgiesmuggler.com and to go nuts. Use the code CHAMP for free shipping. One website to sort out every member of your family this Christmas. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Dave Edwards to my left and Sam Perry to my right. Boys, where were you when Dave Warner went past Sir Donald Bradman?
I think I was in the private school area of Adelaide Oval having some beer or other. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think I was at Bondi Junction, Westfield, with my family.
Yep.
Just trying to do some early Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
Why'd you go to Bondi Junction?
Yeah. You got to change things up because we've done everything else and it's the weekend and we had no plans. We're like, how are you going to amuse a two-year-old?
Yeah.
Let's just go to another Westfield.
Doesn't the parking stress you out, a new Westfield?
Greatly. Greatly so.
And that's why we're pleased to thank our news. No. No, there are other sponsors later.
Okay, we're going to start the show a little bit differently, boys. So we do have Ask TGC a little bit later on, but this one particularly caught my eye and I thought, let's mix it up. Let's read it out. Let's just read it out. So if you indulge me so much,
please.
This comes in from Spinkster89. It says, dear TGC, an odd question, but one I need your help with. Yesterday at my game before I went out to bat, I saw my ex-girlfriend arrive at the ground, and instead of just walking through a remote suburban park in Sydney, she stopped, got a picnic blanket out, and sat down ready to watch the Supreme Heights, which is Sydney third grade cricket. Must be mentioned, we broke up on bad terms with her cheating on me and telling me she needs time for herself and to refigure who she was before getting into a relationship with another guy 2 weeks later. Old feelings came rushing back. Has she come to watch me? If I score a match-deciding 100 against our biggest rivals, will she come rushing back, realising the mistake she's made? Upon arrival to the crease, the captain, a complete alpha with a tidy rig and glorious salad and, oh my, a fine-looking specimen, said, here we go, champ. Scared to say anything back due to the beta male personality, I stayed quiet. I got off to a decent start, looking over idly whenever I hit a boundary, hoping she was clapping. She was not. And then the captain piped up to the young prodigy standing second slip. You know this guy cried at his brother's wedding and made a fool out of himself during the best man speech. Real Michael Scott-like, to a roar of laughter. That's when I realised that my ex's new boyfriend was a skipper of the opposition. I got to 40-odd, 33, when his constant sledging, what was more like bringing up moments from the last few years with that my ex obviously told him, made me get into an erratic, nervous sweat. He came on to bowl and I thought, I'm going to park this fucker onto Spit Road. Mm-hmm. And I walked at him and left it on middle. The chorus of yous and laughter as he made a fool out of me, with his send-off being, guess it's ice cream in the office tonight, champ. You! My post-match ritual for a shit dismissal. My question is, what should I say to him when he comes out to bat next week? Should I champ him back? Or should I just be the better human and say nothing? Cry myself to sleep after going on the circuit and striking out with every woman I lay my eyes on. Your help would be much appreciated.
Okay. Well, thanks for the question, Sphinxter, or whatever. Yeah.
Spinkster 89.
Spinkster 89.
Yep.
Not his real name. Well, a lot going on here.
Too much of anything. Yeah,
too much going on. Difficult to know where to start. I have a few points, though. Just technically speaking, like walking at a bowler, then leaving it on middle, strange.
But Ejaz Ahmed style.
Yeah. But obviously his head's all over the place, as it would be, because that would be quite a sort of strange experience.
Yep.
Disappointed he's watching The American Office with references to Michael Scott. Still a good show. But yeah, you know, it's not Ricky. And and I'm just thinking, like, he absolutely has to say something back. he must say something back this week, this guy.
Yeah.
It's a horrific situation that he was in. It sounds like it could have been worse, you know, if the stuff you share with your partner is anything to go by, really. But, like, what he can say back, like, the problem he's got is he doesn't have the same information that the glorious alpha salad fucking guy has, right, on him. Although there is something really fucking losery about that guy, like, revealing stuff to teammates.
Mm. That's a thing. Like, I find it strange that this guy's actually procured all this information about him, and he's asked his new girlfriend questions about it, his previous partner, because that kind of indicates that he's relatively open-minded and secure in himself, which is something I've never encountered in grade cricket about men.
Yeah.
That's a new age.
You don't want to know anything about previous relationships.
No, exactly. Yeah.
But they must have known too. I mean, for the ex-partner, the woman to come to the game and lay out the picnic blanket means that she knew who they were playing against.
So she's in cahoots with the new boyfriend.
She's in cahoots.
Absolute cahoots. But I'm thinking, like, he has to say something back because he has been completely stitched up by these two. And, like, in the absence of any information, what he can say, I think, is if she's a cheater.
Yeah.
Right?
Cheater, pumpkin eater.
Cheater, pumpkin eater, as we've heard before. But once you're a cheater, you're probably always a cheater, as we know. Yeah. And he might be able to say, like, might be able to walk past, you know, mid-wicket or something, go, where is she? Mm. She's not there. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, while he's hitting one through covers or something like that. Seeds it out. She didn't mean she'd probably do it to you too, mate.
Mm. And by the way, he's clearly dodged a bullet getting out of this relationship because, and maybe that's what he should communicate to him next week.
Yeah.
Just, perhaps he should make comments about her to the best batter, maybe not. I'm definitely speculating.
You're figuring this out in real time.
Yeah, real time. That's all right. There's not many who listen to this show. No. So.
Well, speaking of once a cheater, always a cheater, Dave Warner's 335.
Nice.
Not out. What an innings that was. Mm. Should he still be batting? I don't know. We'll discuss that later. Mm. But, I mean, the match is still going on, which is surprising after day two when Australia had him 6 for 90, about 580 million runs behind Australia's first innings total. So the game is still, it's fair to say Australia's going to win the game. Dave Warner's 335. For some reason, it's controversial.
Yeah.
For some reason. It's controversial 335.
It's controversial because there's no end to the caveats that we can create here. You know, flat road, easiest deck in the world to bat on, caught on a no ball, shit young attack, full of teens, home runs don't count, pink ball doesn't do anything.
Yeah. It's Australia.
Pakistan literally kicking balls over the boundary.
Yeah.
And like if Smith or Labuschagne hits that knock, they're geniuses.
Yeah.
But the difference is, like, with Warner, it's like, good not shit bloke, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that, and that's a sign that Australian cricket's actually in a really safe place when we can start getting really entitled about triple tons again. Like,
I want to
cricket
talk about
should
that.
Be really pleased.
Like, we talk
this.
About how safe we've felt recently, but is there... Can you feel too safe? Like, I feel like I'm now too...
Yeah.
Too safe.
A false sense of security, if you will.
Like, you need a small element of anxiety and competition in cricket. It keeps things interesting. What will the result be? I just feel too safe. I feel like I live in the upper north shore of Sydney. I feel like I live in Tarramurra.
Yeah,
I don't want to live in Tarramurra. I want to live in Marrickville where there's, you know, a bit of edge.
Nice. like I think we're jumping the gun of wanting to feel safe, like which is why all the side mouth comments are happening. Oh, pretty flat though.
Yeah.
What's he like as a bloke though? You know. Hayden's knock against Sean Irvine was much tougher.
But we want enthralling cricket, but we also want to dominate. And those two things are mutually exclusive. We can't have both of those things at the same time.
So it's been brought to many people's attention that Warner's 335 is now the highest test score by any Australian in the history of cricket against a side that is still playing test cricket. So Hayden got 380 at the Wacker against the might of Zimbabwe, which is no longer a cricketing nation, well, test nation anyway.
Yes.
Barely a political nation.
Controversial.
Mugabe's gone though.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
So, like, I mean, this is unbelievably rare. But all the, I was kind of thinking actually, just to shift slightly, Warner's year as a whole.
Yeah,
he was basically the leading run scorer in the World Cup. He's come home and hit a billion runs. He's actually had an amazing 2019. It's just the Ashes.
Yeah,
where it's just like, he sucked in the Ashes.
Yeah,
and that is actually just ruining his reputation for a while. I mean, he's had a great year.
But it is kind of like, you know, and this is going back a little while, but it is like the HSC. I'm sure schools like that as well. Like, certain subjects have different weighting, you know. Like, Warner's got 95 here in fucking PE.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But in four-unit maths in the Ashes, he failed dismally.
Yeah,
and so, like, his UAI is still low at the moment, or lower.
Yeah.
So, like, everything does have different weighting. I do, like... Yeah, what I struggle with are the people who come out and think that there is some mental block for him around, like, scoring runs at home but not doing it away when it's tough. Like, it really is just a function of how his game is set up. It's just beautifully set up for Australian conditions, as it would be because he's grown up in them. You know, it's more a case of praising batsmen who can do it away from home, I think, rather than like really getting stuck into some kind of mental flaw in Warner. I think Mitchell Starc, you could say much the same thing about. Both of them have been the dominant players in this Australian series, and both were probably, you know, the people who dragged the chain at the Ashes in different ways. So, you know, I do think it's it probably is as simple as that, and it's just a case of going, well, that's a really good knock. Congratulations, well done.
There's probably a thing as well of like maybe celebrating Stuart Broad a bit, because some of the balls that were getting Warner out, round the wicket, fucking hooping everywhere.
Yeah. It wasn't obvious how he was meant to play those balls.
Yeah. I was getting behind it, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, like, how in was he that, like, when he got to about 130, 140, people were saying he could get the record? That doesn't happen in any other conditions. Yeah. Like, when you're on 130 runs.
Do you remember during the World Cup, like, when Warner was getting, like, he's got, like, 300s and he's, like, a bit slow?
Mm. Yeah.
Why is he playing slowly? Mm. Literally, he can't win anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You make one mistake in the Australian cricket team, or in his case, 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you see this in other countries as well. Like, Rohit Sharma smashes him in India. Doesn't really do that anywhere else. It does happen in other countries, but it is interesting with Warren in particular.
All like home comforts.
Yeah, home comforts.
I always feel happier when I'm at home.
Yeah. Except when you go to Bondi, Westfield.
Yeah. Well, it actually conversely makes me like Steve Smith more that he doesn't score runs here.
Yeah,
when
it doesn't do it.
I just do it when we need him.
Mm.
Well,
you know? I'm much better in business meetings when I'm operating out of my own house. But when I go on the road, when I go interstate or overseas, my business meetings are much worse. Much worse.
So you're more of a Warner type businessman.
Well, like I'm always like grappling for the right HDMI cable. It's a different setup. I might need like an international adapter, which I usually forget.
Sure.
Sometimes I'm speaking in the wrong language. It's fucked.
Yeah.
Well, Steve Smith failed again. That's the second big takeaway from the Adelaide Test. Does he play in Perth?
Oh, well, big question. I mean, Ricky Ponting's called for Cameron Green to come in.
That's a good point.
100, so yeah, Smith's got to be looking over his shoulder, I'd imagine.
Labuschagne hit 160. This is incredible. Like, what's happening with Marnus is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And like, you talk about good-looking runs. Marnus's runs are good-looking runs.
Stylist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, two daddies in
a row. Two daddies in a row.
They're just so neatly and efficiently compiled, aren't they, his runs?
Mm. The way he gets his runs. Mm. Yeah. And now he bowls handy leg spin.
Right.
Very handy.
Yeah. Mitchell Starc back in the wickets. 6 in the first innings. Eyebrows raised. Swing again.
Hello.
Warner back in the runs. Yeah. Starc taking wickets. It's 2017 again.
Yeah. Hello.
Are we destined for a fall?
Yeah. So cynical, isn't it? Saying that as well, like, if, you know, it's just a reflection on us and others. But see a no ball from someone in Pakistan, and you're like, there's wide eye emojis being sent around WhatsApp groups.
Yeah.
Cummins does one. I just pull it back, mate.
Yeah.
All good. No problem.
Oh, he literally bowls no ball. Not a no ball.
Yeah.
Nah, I can see something behind the line there.
Yeah.
Pakistan picked Muhammad Abbas, people were crying out for him at the Gabba. Why doesn't Abbas play?
Yeah, right.
You can't play Shah. You can't play the 16-year-old. Three balls into Abbas's first over when Warner's walked at him. And it's like, oh yeah, he's injured.
Yeah.
He's injured the whole time. That's why he didn't play. Yeah, I understand now. So again, just caveating Warner's 335 injured attack.
Oh, he just looks so third grade, Muhammad Abbas. I know he's taken a lot of wickets. I know he fucking killed us in the UAE or whatever. He's fucking third grade.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, I don't know how he's taken wickets.
Yeah.
Honestly, at times it just felt like we've been playing against a rep team out there.
Pakistan went to full fifth grade level on day 2 and 3. Even from day one, really, when after 10 overs, like, the keeper was up to Abbas.
Yeah.
It was just like, wow, is this is going to get to... And then, as you said, you know, they're going to start kicking balls over the rope and stuff like that.
Mm. And the body language as well, like, that is really the most grade cricket thing about Pakistan. Like, heads are down, shoulders are just slumped, sloppy fielding, fucking no balls.
Mm.
Like, you ever go to a test and watch the Australians in the field? Like, they are like meerkats.
Mm. Yes.
They're just backs erect on their toes, darting around, looking for any indication from the captain to move 5 metres to their left. The alertness. It's unbelievably professional.
Yeah, Pakistan's body language is exacerbated by the news stories of, like, Australian fitness, like, led by David Warner.
Yeah.
Like, you know, part of the charm of his triple century was just how quick he was between the wickets.
Mate,
he covered a half marathon,
I heard.
That's right. And, you know,
I love those little tidbits.
Isn't he fit now? He used to be a couch lizard. According to Peter Lawler.
Couch potato.
He was.
Just eating potato chips on the couch.
But Candace got him off the couch, and now he's fast and fit and fighting. And Australia's the 90s again.
Watching Muhammad Abbas bowl made me think that Chad Sayers would have played 120 tests for Pakistan. But then thinking about, like, Abbas, like, when he was bowling the UAE to Finch, he was just blowing up Finch's front pad. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Yassir Shah scored 100. That's probably one of the. It's probably one of the. It's probably one of the highlights of the Test match. This is most like it's so, yeah, something like. Pez, you and I were talking the other day, and like when Australia is crushing it, and like you know we like give the opposition a, you know a crumb, we give them a tidbit. It's like oh, that's nice. That's nice, isn't it?
That's when you know that you're really on top when you start like feeling really happy for some like mild success from someone that's not going to actually influence the game. They were showing other number eights who scored hundreds, and like Matt Prior scored one at number eight for England. There would have been absolutely no sympathy from anyone in Australia when he brought up that 100. But like when Yazir's shot just lobbed over Cummins, you know there was relief and like you know. Hearty celebrations around the crowd, basically because there was no threat to Australia's like ultra dominance.
They were 390 runs behind when that happened.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a cute 100.
It was a very cute 100, wasn't it? I loved how he did the leap as well.
Yeah.
The Warner.
Yeah, the Warner leap. Yeah.
Slightly less athletic.
Yeah. Slightly less.
We just would have seen it so many times over the preceding day and a half that he just assumed the properties of the leap.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
It's like when you like, you know, you're living in London as an Australian for like 3 weeks, you get that kind of faux affectation on your accent. You start kind of speaking like a pom.
Daylight cricket at the Adelaide Oval. Came for it. Work well this time?
Oh yeah, I think it's good. We were saying the other day, like watching someone walk into a Pakistani player walk into bat. Maybe maybe it was Babar or someone after that actually. Mm. Maybe Asad Shafiq.
Mm-hmm.
He walked in. It was like day night. Like the lights were fully on. It was a bit overcast at Adelaide Oval. There was, and as he walked on, like the like camera that's on a fucking that's mount like you know like the Mars rover camera was in front of him like fucking rolling around him. There was a spider cam sliding down as he was walking in. All of the Australians were in their vests. Mitchell Starc had a pink ball bowling at 150 k's and like all we ever do in Australia is talk about like gee it's hard to play over in Pakistan, like how fucking foreign would that have been? You know what I mean? Pissed racist blokes out in the crowd at night. Anyway, he got like one absolutely of those, like, destroyed by Stark and was off a couple of balls later. Yeah.
It's like one of those like Boston Dynamics videos.
Yeah. Start pushing him over and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, just quickly, because another test is happening across the ditch, New Zealand and England, second test there. New Zealand hit 375. The test is happening actually right now. Tom Latham scored 100. Joe Root back in the runs. Overnight, they were 5 for 270 or 270 for 5. Depending on what side of the continent you're from. Rory Burns hit 101. Joe Root was on 114. He's pushed on since then because they're playing right now. Joe Root, any commentary on Joe Root? Are we pleased to see Joe Root back in the runs? It means he's captain again for longer.
I like Root. Sorry, I like Root as well. I really like him. I think he's a really good player. I have fewer views on him as a skipper.
Mm.
But it's good to see him. I think we mentioned this last week, but you know, someone of his ilk should be winning matches for England with his innings, and he's always promised a lot. Mm. Obviously, still got a number of hundreds for his country, but I like seeing him succeed. He seems like a pretty good bloke, so you know. And he's not threatened us for a while, so I can say that.
He fouled in the Ashes, and good for him. Dave, how pleased were you to see Rory Burns score more runs than our Burns opening the batting?
Oh, so this is the one where there were two Burns opening the batting simultaneously.
Yep.
On either side of the Tasman. I was really pleased to see one of them get some runs. I'm always pleased to see Burns get runs.
Yeah, package deal.
And Latham as well. He batted well. Actually caught a bit of his innings. They just kept bowling on his fucking pads and just kept putting him away.
He's actually scored heaps of runs this year, Latham.
Mm.
I was being facetious at the top of the show, like how you know how good could Root's 100 be? But like Latham's actually scored heaps of runs this year, top of the order. So you know, get him on the whack.
He's a short, nuggety, left-handed batsman, and you know you need them as we've seen in our test.
He's a bit
test.
He's a bit Kadich-like, actually. Sort of crabby across the crease.
Yeah,
a bit flicky to the leg side. Mm. Get him on the whack of that pink ball. We'll sort him out.
Why are you looking at me with side eyes?
Side eyes,
sports smile,
and side mouth.
Yeah. You're talking like there's flies everywhere. You don't want to get in your mouth.
I've got vertigo.
Your body's angling at 45 degrees towards. how you manage that.
All right, Richard Cheekway is about to come to the studio, so we better set up. And then after that, hashtag ICGC.
Okay, boys, something a little bit different at the top of the show here. We are going to conduct a debate. We're calling it the mini debate for KO minis. KO minis give you every catch, every six, and every wicket from an entire match or a day's play in under half an hour. We're going to be talking about whether Tim Payne should have declared when he did with David Warner on 335 not out. Now, who's on the affirmative, who's on the negative? Dave, you're going to say, as far as I understand, that Bradman should have been on it. The floor is yours.
Well, thanks, Pez. Thanks, he goes. I mean, it's a tough position for Tim Payne, isn't it? I mean, does he do the time-honoured thing and declare with Warner on 334, make sure he gets that 334 as a homage to Bradman, or does he try and allow him to set a new record, continue to advance and innovate as a society, which is important? I think we're always kind of looking back at what Mark Taylor did, as we always do. It was the late 90s. You've got to consider that as a precedent. I mean, he started all this. His declaration on 334 was done at the height of Bradmania. So Bradman was still alive. John Howard was in power. It was a relative period of global stability, of course. Now we're in 2019. Of course, Trump, Brexit, the existential threat of global warming. I think terror-level threats in all major cities are at least substantial. So we're also in the era of cancel culture, aren't we? And, you know, since his death, Bradman's obviously been exposed as a selfish loner who acquired runs with relentless intensity. But I think that in this troubling period of world history, we need Bradman now more than ever. And we need symbols more than ever. And yeah, he's already got his own museum. He's got thousands of shrines. You know, there are stands within Australian stadia that represent his name. But we need to preserve and protect history. And that's why Payne should have got a runner out, should have told Dave Warner, 334, we're fucking doing it. This is it. And also communicate to Dave Warner all the geopolitical context that I mentioned just then.
Of course. While they're just at the crease before he had to face up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Comparing Bradman era with today's era and all the everything comes with that. So, I mean, sure, that is what I think. I think Bradman should be honoured at all times and all costs.
So just to summarise, what you're saying is that Tim Payne should have made David Warner declare on 334 because, you know, we need Bradman now in our society more than ever because of the various geopolitical contexts that, and issues that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at Bradman's 334, I mean, that's probably 600 runs in today's economy if you account for CPI increases.
Good point. Okay, here goes. You've taken the view that actually Warner should have been allowed to continue on.
Oh, in the perfect world, Warner would still be batting.
Yes.
For mine. We're 1-0 up in the series. Why do we need to win the second game? He should bat till Sunday late evening. Yeah,
that's right.
I like this storyline because Warner was cancelled for a bit and we forget that.
Yeah.
But now he's cancelling Bradman. He should have cancelled Bradman. Well, he did. He passed his 299 in Adelaide, passed his 334, still be batting. Should have passed Brian Lara, who was at the ground, as we said. So, I mean, David should still be batting. Get 700.
Yeah.
What's like?
Why stop at 335, saying?
Yeah, why stop at 335? It's a tease. He teased Bradman with his 334.
And just noting in the press box, he goes that like a lot of the stats fiends in there were absolutely ropeable, that they weren't there to witness history.
Ropeable.
People were telling us that the captain was a disgrace for allowing David Warner to merely score 335 not out because they just wanted to rock and roll at Pakistan in the night. We could have been there to witness history right in front of Lara. And you're basically saying, if I could summarise, that life really should just be people cancelling others.
Yes.
You get cancelled, but then the only way you sort of sort of instate your relevance is to cancel somebody else.
Yes, correct. So when Alex Carey's in the side in 6 months, when he's captain of Australia, and he's going to open the batting, and when he gets 336, we'll think that was a great day. A great day at the Adelaide Oval. That's the mini debate for KO Minis. KO Minis give you every catch, every six, and every wicket from an entire match or a day's play in under half an hour. Today's Grade Cricketer podcast is brought to you with thanks to Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that allows you to get the key ideas from best-selling non-fiction books from experts in the form of bite-sized text and audio. All the key ideas in 15 minutes or less from award-winning titles by experts who have conferred with the author. It's the perfect time saver for those that want to read more but don't have the time, and you can consume all of it on the go from wherever you are. The topics in their library include sex and relationships, religion, parenting, science, motivation and inspiration. You can explore the library that's already over 3,000 titles strong, with 40 new titles added every month. There's already 12 million people worldwide using Blinkist, which you can find on the App Store or wherever else you get your apps. And Blinkist have got an exclusive deal for you guys and girls out there listening to the Great Cricketer podcast. Go to blinkist.com/cricket. That's blinkist.com/cricket to start a 7-day free trial. So go and check it out. That's blinkist.com/cricket, or go and find it in the App Store.
Okay, boys, you can hear Mariah Carey all through hotels, motels, malls, your own house, your own Spotify playlist, etc., because it's December and it's Christmas. Frankly, I still like the song, and I'm happy to say it. I don't know what that says about me. But anyway, with that in mind, we have to start thinking about, you know, what to get people for Christmas. And, you know, it's often a political affair. what do you get family members and colleagues for Christmas? And can you maybe just describe some of the thinking that goes in behind that?
Matching stuff. I mean, like just matching kit generally. Like we speak a lot about the value of matching kit, looking good at all times.
Look at the North Korean army. They look fucking good. Yeah, everything's perfectly in sync.
Synchronized.
Belts are shined. Yeah. I mean, forget the politics.
Yep.
Aesthetics, they look very good.
I'm thinking like in the backyard as well, just on Christmas Day, Boxing Day, a lot of like that's when backyard cricket in Australia is like particularly at its, that's when it's at its absolute peak. If you want to pick sides, matching kit is good. T-shirts, hats, socks, smugglers.
Smugglers for sure. Matching. I mean, I think if you're having a Christmas lunch with the whole family, you could do worse than to get 22 pairs of ODI-themed smugglers and just hand them out. Grandma, granddad, Uncle Roger.
You got 22 people coming for Christmas.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
But if you were to, if you were to have an extended family Christmas, extended family. We like to keep things relatively nuclear at our household.
Yep.
emotionally.
Yeah.
No, but get everyone the smugglers. Your sister's new boyfriend. You don't know much about him. They've been dating for 3 weeks. He's been invited to Christmas. Get him in a pair of one day smugglers. See what he's got.
What's the amount of time that you can be with someone and then invited to Christmas lunch?
I reckon it's
3 weeks is too soon.
No, certainly. I would say at least 3 or 4 months. And then it has to be kind of a serious 3 to 4.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So 2 months to me feels too new.
Yeah.
But that, like, if you want to extend an olive branch, budgies would be the way to do that.
I would have thought so.
Yeah, it's comforting.
Oh, it's clean. The other thing with Budget Smuggler is, like, if you go onto the website and you want to take the philosophy of just matching with everyone, if you just want to brand up your Christmas, you know, for everybody, just go in and type donuts.
That's what you
into
should
Budget Smuggler. There's a whole range of stuff that you can just get and just can do it in one hit.
You know, back in the day when you would just, like, acquire, like, you like those, that set of gloves, you like those pads, you like that stick.
Yeah, matching
now,
kit.
Now it has to be all the same. Because now, you can't like a kookaburra bat and then have granite gloves.
Absolutely.
It looks fucking weird.
But this is part of the corporate philosophy of just joined up strategies. You've got to ladder up everything has to be joined up. It has to all fucking work for something, you know, something greater. You know, 1 + 1 + 1 = 5. They used to say in corporate Australia, which is not true, but you know,
Apple ruined everything, I think. You know, everything needs to be interoperable with their OS. It's just fucked everything up.
Okay. Well, you know, so with that in mind, budgiesmuggler.com.au. Okay. Eyeballing us in the studio today is one of the great cult heroes of a great cult era, state cricket, grade cricket, shires cricket, overseas pro cricket, and ARIA charting cult frontman, Richard Cheekwee. Cheeks, it's an enormous pleasure to welcome you to the Great Cricketer podcast.
Oh, wow. I was really wondering how you're going to introduce me. I mean, I know Brian Lara got about 4.5 minutes worth of his... but I'll take that. Thank you very much.
And the best dressed guest, I should say, that's ever come into the studio. You're wearing a pinstripe suit. You've taken off the blazer, revealing incredible. A nice vest underneath. Looking sensational.
Thank you. I mean, my head office is saying, you know, you've got to dress a bit more smartly. So I'm saying, let's do it. Let's do it for the team.
Cheeks, I don't think I've ever looked forward to asking the opening question more. What is your relationship to grade cricket?
Oh, grade cricket. I mean, for me, grade cricket was where it all began. Yeah. I mean, I loved grade cricket.
Yeah.
I mean, my memories of grade cricket, I was 14 when I went down and had my first session because my brother, Michael, he was a couple of years older and he said, like, you're getting too big for the backyard. It's time to come down and meet some of the bigger guys. And my first memory was everybody's just so old. And the first training session, you know, I was looking over at Coogee Oval in the corner and we had, you know, 3 turf wickets and 2 synthetic wickets. And being 14, no helmet. You didn't need a helmet in the under-12s, the under-14s. And I looked over at the synthetic nets and saw the 5th and 6th grade bowlers bowling. And I thought, that's not too bad. I'll go in there. Yeah. That'll be my first session. But they got me because they put me in the 1st grade net and looking up and I saw Mike Whitney and, you know, Trevor Jay and, you know, Wayne Heathcote. These were two opening 1st grade bowlers.
And you're 14.
I'm 14. I walked in there and I was petrified, you know, looking up and seeing Mike running in. I've only seen him on the TV, you know, and as he got to...
On Who Dares Wins.
On Who Dares Wins. So I said, I mean, this was a dare in itself.
Yeah.
And he ran into bowl and I just wasn't concentrating. So I walked away and he came running down the wicket and said, what's wrong with you? I said, I'm sorry, Mr. Whitney, but I just wasn't ready. And normally the next bowler runs in to bowl the ball, but he said, no, I want first crack at this boy.
And he, can you just announce that to the entire
training stopped.
Training stopped.
Yeah.
Training stopped. And I faced that first ball and I thought, I'm 14. I've got no helmet. I've got a very thin thigh pad. Mm-hmm. He's not going to bounce me. So he's let this thing go and it's gone past my nose. And for the first time in my life, I thought, thank God I'm Asian. It just missed.
That's great. Well, you're the seventh highest ever run scorer in first grade cricket in Sydney, 11,000 runs, 2100s. Can you just sort of take us into the bowels of of Sydney and New South Wales cricket in the 90s? Like it's the grade cricket comp that's world famous. The state team was dominant. Sydney was thriving pre-Olympics. Peak aggressive cricket, and you were right there in the centre of it. Like when you close your eyes and think about it, what do you see?
Wow, I see New South Wales just dominating. Oh my God, the team that we had. You know, when they always talk about when Australian cricket's strong, New South Wales cricket is, you know, stronger.
Who are they?
Look, I was lucky to play in an era where we had such, you know, great players. We were all battling for the number six spot. Let's be fair. I mean, they had Taylor, Slater, War, Bevan. That was the top five in New South Wales cricket, let alone Australia. So the rest of us were, you know, we're all battling for that number six spot. And you know, if you're a good selector, you'd pick an all-rounder. You'd think, well, we've got enough batters, so we normally picked an all-rounder. I can only remember two times that I actually got picked to play for New South Wales when they were at full strength. And that was a pretty proud moment for me to be picked. And it was, I'd walk up to the captain, and sometimes it was Mark Taylor, and sometimes it was Steve Waugh, and I didn't. I just said, no price for guessing six. That's a guess.
You talking about your first net there, grade training, 14. You're thinking, oh, I'm just going to the third, fourth net. I'll go into the shit net.
Yeah.
And you get put in the first grade net. So you're obviously tapped on the shoulder, basically, like, you have serious potential to be playing here. And also get bumped as well, first ball, just like, not only are you a decent talent here, but we're going to treat you like an adult at 14.
You had to grow up real quick.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the, you know, when the ball cannoned off the back of the net, sort of landed about, you know, a quarter of the way back down the wicket. So I had to go and pick it up. And as I picked it up, you know, that was the first time Whit just eyeballed me. I thought, you know, Trimble, I said, there you go, Mr. Whitney. And he said, welcome to Randwick.
Oh, my God.
And I was just like, that's where it was at.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, grade cricket was tough. It was uncompromising. Mm. It was, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s, you would see a lot of draws.
Yeah.
You just don't see them today because people would just get about four or five down, six down, and shut up shop and say, we're not going to give you guys an inch.
Mm. Right.
And it was tough. It was tough cricket.
You mentioned your brother earlier. Did he stick around in the grade cricket ecosystem for a while with you? Did you play alongside him?
We started in the backyard like everybody else. You know, I'm a big believer that's where Test cricketers are born. They're born in the backyard.
It's difficult these days, you know, with high-density apartments and the decline of the quarter-acre dream.
Very true, very true. But Michael, my brother, he paved the way for me.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have had anywhere near the career without my brother. You know, without him really realising it, I was always aspiring to be as good as him. And because he was a couple of years older than me, he was always in the higher team, so I was always watching better cricket. So, you know, when he was in third grade and I was in fifth grade, I wanted to get the third grade. Then I got to third grade, he wanted to be in second grade, and it sort of snowballed after that. And when we got to first grade together, it was awesome. Then I had to score more runs than him.
Yep.
So it was always, you know, having him there and, you know, just, and also my best mate. So, you know, when Michael retired from grade cricket because of his work commitments, he went and played Shires for a couple of years, and that turned into, I think, over 10 years in Shires. So when I finished grade cricket in 2005-06, I decided I'm going to have one more year with him so we can finish together. We started in the backyard. Beautiful. We wanted to finish. We ended up having 4 years together, And I can't tell you, it was just awesome.
You're probably very well equipped then to kind of describe the differences in culture and standard between grade cricket and Shires. I mean, can you set the record straight on grade versus Shires?
Well, I was one of those, I guess, ignorant skeptics that thought, you know, this Shires was just grade, you know, just park cricket.
Yeah.
Look, I was pleasantly surprised. I'll be honest with you, pleasantly surprised. I mean, it's you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, they had a lot of they had a few, I guess, you know, senior players that have played grade cricket and for whatever reason's gone and played Shires because of work commitments or whatever, because you start later and finish earlier. But they still cram 85 overs in at the back end of the day. So you're only playing two sessions, but it's long sessions. Mm-hmm. So it's but you know, you play on turf and you always get this young bloke trying to, you know, tear your head off because you're a former grade player and first class player, so you have to have your wits about you. No doubt about it.
You're talking about your brother earlier. I was just reading some of the comments. Celebrating or announcing your appearance on the podcast. David Hancock wrote, "His brother Michael was better." Not even a question. Just a comment. Just like, Richard was pretty good.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
I want to know. Have you seen the Robolinda 2 clip of your 100 in the Mercantile Mutual Cup at the SCG against Western Australia?
Only about 20. No. look, Robolinda, I mean, he's the people's champ. I mean, listening to his podcast last week, I mean, that's fantastic.
He's also the uploader of the Six and Out film clip I noticed on YouTube. It's the only version available. It's uploaded by Robolinda 2.
Yeah.
So he's followed your career closely. Frighteningly
it's,
so.
It's very humbling. You know, I mentioned, I think Brian Lara's stats and, you know, unfortunately there weren't too many hundreds when it came to myself, but to put that package together and just to be able to relive it. Look, I showed my daughter. She just turned 5. Mm. And she just looked at it and was just like, no, that's not you. So it's really to have that sort of footage and to be able to show them, you know, when they get a bit older. And so, you know, guess what? Dad played a bit of cricket back in the time. That's pretty cool.
Just on that, like, on that knock, I was writing it down earlier. Like, when people say Richard Chiqui scored 131 off 146 in the Mercantile Mutual Cup final at the SCG in 93-94 for New South Wales versus Western Australia in a partnership of 191 with a lid and hat-free Michael Bevan. Are you aware of how almost sexual all of those words are for cricket fans of a certain age?
Everyone in this room?
Absolute peak.
Yeah.
That's very
hard. We are your target market.
That's very hard to answer. But Oh, look, I could tell you that I didn't feel very sexual at the end of that match because Michael Bevan, you know, made me run most of those. You know, he was big on the quick singles, and, you know, and I mean, if there's ever a guy you want to bat in a one-day game to give you the strike, it's Michael Bevan. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
I remember I saw him swimming down at Manly in the saltwater pool, the outdoor pool there. Just terrific, terrific upper body. I mean, just on the Mercantile Mutual Cup, though, itself, I mean, everyone, as Pez just said, who grew up in the 90s, was a cricket fan, remembers this competition. It was kind of glitzy and glamorous. I think the theme song was The Feeling's Mutual. Mutual Cup, which I still don't fucking know what that means, but it was catchy. Well, what are your memories of that competition, peak mid-90s domestic cricket in Australia?
Yeah, look, it was awesome, you know, and we got an opportunity to play at, you know, the smaller grounds as well, which, you know, North Sydney Oval with, you know, 5,000 people, 10,000 people at North Sydney Oval. It just meant that people wanted to come and watch. It's hard at the SCG because it's, you know, it's you're not as close to the action. And, you know, I think that final we had about, it was the first time ever they actually opened up a different section of the ground apart from the members because there was people coming to watch the final. But to be fair, we only got an opportunity. I mean, I was part of the Young Blues squad that only got an opportunity when the senior players weren't available, which back in those days was quite a bit. So, yeah, we got a few opportunities. I mean, you just had to try and make the most of them.
You're saying you didn't score many hundreds in your career, but Ian Glue on one of the social medias commented, scored 100 against the West Indies in Newcastle, New South Wales versus the West Indies. Walsh and Ambrose opened the attack.
It was another only first-class century, but against Walsh and Ambrose.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool one, right?
Yeah.
It's cool, yeah.
I never did that. Yeah,
look, I remember it fondly. You know, I didn't actually sleep a wink the night before because I was right. next in the bat. Yeah.
Well, that's what Steve Smith does.
You know, I remember just annoying the concierge at the hotel because they had a piano in the foyer, and I was actually rooming, I think, with Mark Taylor, and I couldn't sleep, so I just went down in the foyer and just played the same four tunes over and over about 3 hours.
What tunes?
Just some show tunes.
And then I sat next to Curtly Ambrose at lunch, and I sort of tried to strike up a conversation with him. Yeah. And there's only two types of West Indians, and ones you can't shut up, and then the other was just Gulban, and that was it.
Yeah,
I got nothing out of him, and. Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty cool day, but once again, I think Bevo got 80-odd. We put on a big partnership, I remember, David Friedman got 10-for or 11-for for the match, and we beat the West Indies, and I remember the headlines the next day were two Chinamen smashed the West Indies.
Oh, it was a different time, wasn't it?
Yeah, you can't say that today,
no,
right?
No, I couldn't.
I was going to ask you, I'm just reading more questions on here through social media, but on that sort of theme, Dan Kwan wrote in, he says, "Dear TGC, as an East Asian cricketer, is it weird that I get wigged out when I face opposition of the same ethnicity as me, purely given the unpopular nature of the sport in that part of the world? I've obviously never watched myself play, so it's very rare for me to come up against an Asian player, despite my very Oriental surname being on the team sheet every week. Also, am I inadvertently racist? Kind regards, Dan. P.S. Send Richard Cheekwin my regards."
Could be my cousin, really, couldn't he? No, look, I grew up at school being the only Asian kid in my class, let alone my school.
Right. Where did you grow up?
In the eastern suburbs, in Kensington and Kingsford. I went to Marsland College at Randwick, and, it wasn't until the back end of school days that we had a lot more multicultural kids coming through. When I was playing for New South Wales, one of the things that New South Wales used me for was to try and promote cricket at the more, ethnicity schools, I suppose, so to speak. So that was really a lot of fun for me, to see the look on the kids' faces and to see now how multicultural we are in Australia, particularly in cricket. It makes me feel really good because, I've had a very small part to play in that. But to see how far it's come, going to, my old club at Randwick Petersham, seeing the launch of the new season and seeing that, it's spot the Aussie, almost. Mm. So that gives me a lot of pride.
Well, towards the end of your career, Usman Khawaja would have been coming through as well, wouldn't he? Yeah. First Muslim.
Well, Uzi and I have a pretty cool relationship. I call him Daniel's son. He calls me Mr. Miyagi. seeing him come through, there was a special knock. I mean, we knew he was a special talent when he was 14 and coming through the grades. But he got to, he played in the first grade final at Coogee Oval against Easton. He was 16. And he was not out at tea. Unfortunately, he copped a pretty ordinary decision that I won't say cost us the match, but I can't mention any names, Mr. Rodney Tucker. But
destroyed a lot of dreams that
way. Yeah. We knew he was pretty special back then, and to see where he's come, I'm a bit disappointed that he's not playing with the main team at the moment. Mm. I would like to have seen him give him more of a chance as an opener, because we see him as an opener.
He was an opener coming through grade cricket at Randwick Petersham the whole time.
Look, he's always been an opener.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, his numbers don't lie. Mm. He's got the best average in world cricket as an opener.
Mm. Yep.
Like, and all the selectors have done is just cry out to look for an alternative when he's just sitting there perfectly waiting to open the batting. So I just don't understand that. But, I mean, as the ship sailed now, obviously the guys are doing extremely well now, albeit Pakistan, but I'd love to see him opening the batting for Australia, because that's his best suit. Yeah.
I'd like to just shift gears here and move to your other career, not the career that you've just come from with your lovely suit, but your musical career. Pez mentioned, number 100, I think, in the ARIA charts for that year, 6 and Outs, Can't Bowl, Can't Throw. I think this was the first recognised band made up solely of professional cricketers. Could be wrong, not sure, but I mean, this is obviously a time when cricketers had hobbies, I guess, these days they're just automatons that hit balls, and that's literally all they do. But how did the concept of Six and Out come together? All New South Wales cricketers, you know, the Lee brothers, Gav Robinson drums, Brad McNamara. Who was the first person to say, look, let's get this up, and how did you get in that?
That's a good question. How did I get in
there? How did you get in there?
Look, we... Gavin Robertson is a true musician. In fact, he's that good of a drummer that I would put him in the category of being a musician first and a cricketer second.
Nice.
He's that good. Mm. You know, he...
What is it about his drumming that separates him from others?
The fact that he's
just tied on the
he's
beat.
He's just tied on the beat. Yeah. He's just, but he's been loves in bands all his life.
Yeah.
So, and he's even today, he's looking to drum more.
Yep.
He's going through a bit tough trot at the moment. And, you know, I'm sure everyone's heart goes out to him at the moment, but he's fighting. And only recently I've caught up with him and he's put on a couple of kilos and he's looking good and he's in a good place. So, Robbo, you know, we wish him all the well, all the best. But going back to your question, we all love music, okay? And when you have the same schedules, some of us like to play golf. We decided that, you know what, let's just get in the studio and have a jam and see what happens. Shane Lee and Brad McNamara went over to England one year and were playing a bit of guitar and I was over there at the same time and all of a sudden we came back and we had to do Greg Matthews' testimonial. And we did the national anthem to the version of I Will Walk 500 Miles.
Yep.
And it went down like a hit, and then all of a sudden it just sort of something snowballed from there. So we all had the same schedule back then, so it was easy to actually do some gigs. We met a really cool guy called Garth Porter from Sherbet, and he became our producer. He was a big sports fan, and, you know, we're music tragic, so all of a sudden we got together, and next thing you know, we had this album. 99 it was too, by the way.
Change you there. No, always round up though.
Yeah. And just tell us about Can't Bowl, Can't Throw. I mean, like, if you delve into the lyrics of it, people think, oh, well, it's a reference to, you know, what, yeah, and it was Shane Warne said about Scott Muller. But when you go into it, actually, it's like three separate stories of someone just being rejected, first from a cricket team, then from being, for auditioning for Richie Beno's job, and then just from a woman. At a bar, all people just say you can't bowl and can't throw. Which
that
is
was
strange.
Me, yeah, rejected. That was me.
Yeah. Do you think it succeeded so much because it just dealt with, you know, what all great cricketers are aware of, which is just failure of men?
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't cricket? I mean, cricket's all about having, you know, learning to fail, isn't it? But look, can't bowl, can't throw was really, I mean, it was cool. It was, you know, the words can't bowl, can't throw is public domain. And, you know, if you look into the lyrics, it's got absolutely nothing to do with Scott Muller. Unfortunately, he didn't see it that way. So, you know, we got some advice about whether we should do it or not. And at the time, the Australian captain said, mate, go for it. And we got his blessing, so we did it.
Steve Waugh?
Yeah, it might have been Steve Waugh. And, a few others.
Love Steve Waugh stories.
Yeah, there's a couple of sledges there too. Yeah.
Oh, shocking.
Yeah.
But it was fun, you know, and that's something that I don't think we see enough today is that we don't have enough fun. We don't laugh at ourselves enough. Yeah. I think we're a bit scared to laugh at somebody or laugh at ourselves. Because
well, you get cancelled if you laugh at somebody.
Well, that's right.
Cancel culture is alive and well.
And, you know, I mean, that's what 2020 cricket's about, isn't it? It's about laughing, having a bit of fun and seeing some balls fly over the fence, you know. It's great.
How do you reckon you would have gone in T20? Because your game's almost cut out for that. I mean, you were an aggressive kind of batsman at a time when, you know, 50-over cricket wasn't so aggressive, I guess, and you were kind of an outlier in that respect. You know, would you have fancied T20?
And also, like, I mean, we've interviewed people in the past who are from, like, previous generations, one of whom mentioned cash about four times. I think, do I get the sense that people from, you know, previous generations would have loved a crack at T20?
Absolutely. Look, I would love to have played T20. Yeah. Probably still 10 overs too long for my liking. But, look, there were guys, we had to work while we were playing. And I played in an era, at the back end of the era, just before the contracts came out. You still had to work for a living while you were playing cricket, because if you didn't play, you didn't get paid. And it actually cost some players money to be in the squad, because they were travelling either from Penrith and they weren't getting a game, so it was actually costing them money to be in the squad, which was wrong. But the players before us got less. So it's hard to compare. So, you know, we respect those players, and obviously the players that get paid a lot of money now, we don't begrudge them, because the players before us actually had a bit of a role to play in what they're getting today.
Just another one here. Darren Murphy says, please spend some time going over Cheeks' trademark celebration. It was an extended bat and 360-degree swivel. Discuss.
I didn't really get to swivel that much. It was, I don't know, I just...
It was like Jadeja, kind of like with a sword, like the...
No, it wasn't like Jadeja. He was more like Zorro, wasn't he? It was more so that, I remember, you know, there was always somebody I wanted to point at the crowd if I knew they were there, whether it was someone from my family or my partner or somebody, or my, you know, obviously my teammates. But I didn't want just to point at the team. I wanted to get the whole team. So I'd start at one end and just get to the rest. And normally it was just a little flick because there wasn't that many people at the ground. So I'd start with just a little flick.
Just economising the action rather than doing individually each person at the ground. Just a little swoop across.
Just a little swoop across. So if there was only people, say, you know, from 90 degrees, I'd only do a 90 degrees little swivel. But that day at the SCG, or if it was at North Sydney Oval and I got to 50, it just, something happened, and I just kept going because there was more people. I wanted to do everybody. So I don't know. That's how it happened. There was no preconceived thing, but it's nice that, you know, that some people remember. So thank you.
Anything from anyone else?
Yeah, I've got just one question. Another one that's come in, and you might be able to shed some light on this, Richard. It refers to what I presume to be Shires cricket in 2010. It was a 2010 quarter final. I've got a question in from Julian McMillan. I don't know who he was playing for. Presumably you were playing for South, but it was a quarterfinal. And the question is, can you ask him in the Shires quarterfinal of 2010 if he hit it?
It feels like the statute of limitations might have passed.
Yeah,
on this one.
9 years, yeah.
Now, firstly, do you remember what he's referring to there?
No, I don't. nice. And the answer is absolutely not, because I actually retired in 2009.
That's it from me from a formal questions perspective, but I see Dave reaching for a prop.
Well, I think a couple of people have asked about Six Now. They've been texting us throughout the week and on Twitter and so forth, and we've got him in the studio. We don't get too many guests in the studio, and it might be remiss of us if we don't take the opportunity to try and perform an acoustic version of the famous Can't Bowl, Can't Throw. Would you be up for this?
If you can play it.
Not very well. Not very well. What kind of version do you want? Do you want like a kind of stripped back John Mayer style, or just more traditional to the... I can do a few things.
I don't even know if I can remember the lyrics. But
I've got the lyrics in front of me.
That's one thing, I guess that's one thing that we... are unique as we actually had to learn our own songs. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And now are we doing the whole song?
Oh, why don't we do the famous third verse, which is about the lady in the bar. And I think that was your verse, wasn't it?
It was. Shane Lee sang that one, but I'll have a crack at it.
This is a real TGC memory happening right here. Right. This is the thing that's happening.
And you want some lyrics?
I've just gone onto guitartabs.com and I'm going to learn this in real time.
Didn't you brought your guitar and didn't look at the song?
He brought it with me.
This is real.
What's the first?
Real Brent. He went home to get it.
Well, I met this good looker down at the bar.
Get the guitar.
It's good.
Sounds good.
Well, I met this good looker down at the local bar. And I told her she was talking to this big-time cricket star. I told her my stats and I dropped my name. She said, never heard of you, and I hate that game. Well, you can't bowl and you can't throw. I'm just telling you what everybody knows. You absolute sitters, you put down. All the tail-enders hit you out of the ground. Don't ask warning. It was Caraman Joe. He'll say you can't bowl and you can't throw. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
How'd that feel? When was the last time you banged that out?
Oh, my gosh. I can't remember the last time. We're actually talking about doing you know, some more gigs. So watch this space.
Oh, really, really.
Those pipes sound good though as well.
Pipes are good. Deep. Real good. Good.
Yeah.
Different kind of pipes. Mm. All right. Well, Cheeks, if you wouldn't, if you do us a pleasure of staying for our final segment of the show, hashtag AskTDC, where the people listening out there write in with some psychiatric problems mostly. But if you do us the honour of staying with Sam, Dave and I to answer these questions. So Ed writes in, he says, "G'day, choppers. I'm an estate agent in a pretty posh part of London, and yesterday I was showing flats to the most glamorous woman I have ever met. She was Iranian French, wearing sunglasses in the rain, had incredibly expensive hair, littling French accent, opera tickets that night, and used to be the ambassador's wife. She had so much presence that I found myself nodding to everything she said, and when I turned back, and realized she was saying, the mentality of working class disgusts me. They're so obstructive, and on and on. Here I was nodding, saying, yes, I know exactly what you mean. Bear in mind, I voted for Corbyn twice and will do again. What was happening? She had so much presence that I had just had that I just had to follow her around. Thank God I had the lexical range to realize what this feeling was, being alphaed, pure alpha. But can someone be too glamorous to alpha? In any case, thanks for spreading the term. It helped me deal with my discomfort a whole lot better. Best, Ed." Can you be too glamorous?
I'm just surprised that a real estate agent's coming to us with issues of confidence. I've just never experienced that in Sydney. Maybe London-based real estate agents are a little bit less secure.
Yeah. I mean, just in your era, Cheeks, like, who would have been at the hierarchy of the alphas in New South Wales cricket terms? You know, when you turned up the training, who was kind of, you know, having the last word on things? Who was kind of, who had the best stories? Mm. Who ran the show there?
Oh, just all the senior guys. I mean,
you don't want to name one?
Greg Matthews. Yeah. Yeah. He was sort of the alpha of the alpha.
Yeah. The alpha of alphas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Matthew Cockrell writes in, "Hi TGC, this winter I've been brought into the indoor cricket squad at my village club. I was coming into this particular game having been run out, one run away from retirement, 24 runs doesn't sound as good, by the captain in the previous fixture. Anyway, having been set a target of 160 in 12 overs, I was asked to open the batting. Still living off my quick fire 40 in the last proper game of the year, 33 off 9 balls in a dead game, everyone on the boundary in a second 11 team, already confirmed as being relegated, I eagerly padded up. With my dad in attendance and in fine form myself, I strolled out to the crease, carpet rolled out onto basketball court, wearing my newly acquired black gloves from an indie supplier in Sussex whilst wearing whites. Yuck. Being the beater I am, I took up the non-striker's end. Three balls in, the captain nailed a straight drive to cover, who just happened to be a mate from school who I was desperate to show that I was better than the shitty village cricketer I was in the school team. I was called through for a single, I put in a full-length dive, the throw was not a direct hit, and I was still out by a few feet. I have now been run out by the same person twice since I last faced a delivery. I have subsequently been dropped this week. Have I been hard done by? Is the dropping justified by my use of black gloves? Was it my spell of three overs, one for 58, including a drop in the same game, which I've tactically omitted to this point, that ultimately led to my dismissal? Thoughts?"
Can't wear black gloves, mate. That looks outrageous. I even noticed yesterday Stark was bowling with, he had black socks underneath the whites.
Yeah.
And it just looks terrible. If you play village cricket and you're wearing black gloves, you're going to have to be the fucking best player in that park to pull that off.
But the key word that you've used there is park, because I think whites are applicable, you know, when they look good when set against a pristine green outfield. But I think indoor, it's a completely different sport. Indoor cricket isn't real cricket. You can wear black gloves.
That's a good point.
You know, there's fucking room for experimentation, I think, in terms of kit.
Mm.
That's just my thoughts.
Mm.
And let's not forget, indoor cricket, when you hit a six, you have to run. Yeah. What's that about? Surely you should be able to stand back and admire it.
Is anyone trying to rope you into any indoor cricket or any kind of cricket cameos these days?
The odd cricket cameo, not indoor, but the odd 2020. You know, through the ACA, there is a little bit of 2020 cricket going back to the people.
Yep.
And to the places that don't get an opportunity to see some of the players play. So that's pretty cool. So there's always opportunities for that. And, you know, kudos to the ACA for doing that.
Not too late to get that IPL contract after all.
Actually, someone wrote in a question asking, is it true that you hit Gavin Robinson for a six at Coogee Over, which hit the McDonald's sign, which is approximately a 200-metre six, if true?
No, it wasn't Gavin Robinson. I would never do that to my drummer.
Yeah.
It was true.
You hit the Macca sign from Coogee Oval.
There was a bit of story that, look, he was giving me plenty of lip
yeah.
and telling me that, you know, I was a bit of a fat C.
Right.
And good stuff. And all I, you know, didn't want to run and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And so
didn't want to run.
And it was at Cow Corner, so and the wind was with me, so right. I hit it, and it did hit McDonald's, and hit the sign. And I said, while you're there, just get me a quarter pound of meal and bring it back to me. I'm a bit hungry.
Just for context for people who haven't been to Coogee, which is, you know, 99% of the people listening to this podcast, that is massive. That is, that's, boy, it's plus 100. That's a plus 100. That's what, 130?
People just loved hitting the signs back then. Did you ever get close to the Mercantile Mutual sign back in the day?
Yeah.
Yes, I think I hit it on the bounce.
Right.
So it was close.
That is close.
And yeah, so I actually asked for half the check and they laughed at me.
All right. I think it's the last one.
Yeah, last one.
For the day. Mitch Connolly asks, dear Ask TGC, I'm curious to find out your opinions on something that's been getting on my nerves in the media in Australia. When did it become cool or funny to be a rare unit? I feel the media has seen an opportunity and really leaned into making them seem cool or funny when indeed they are just fucking weird. Is this a part of the beta era, hence the rare unit is becoming the new alpha? Is this me having withdrawal issues from the alpha era of Punter, Warne, Gilchrist, etc.? Or is this just a sign of change in that in 2029, our 11 will consist of 6 rare units in attack of Sayers, Gannon, Tremaine and Lloyd Pope? I hate change. Thoughts?
Mitch does hate change. Rare units are more interesting. Like, we're endlessly interested by Bairsto, for instance, the rarest of units, the king of the rare units, king of the jungle in that respect.
We're finally living in an era where self-expression is encouraged, and I guess rightly so. I mean, my only fear is that becoming rare will become mainstream, much like the hipster movement, where there's an aesthetic there that is identifiable with hipsters, and that's not cool either.
Yeah. It's all fashion, though, isn't it? You know, the rare unit's in at the moment, but then once we start struggling as rare units, you know, the desire for the alpha will be calling from deep within us. You know, just wait a little bit, Mitch. The alpha will be back, I'm sure. So as soon as something goes wrong, we'll be alpha boorish guys all over again. You don't have to wait long.
Can you relate to these new breed of cricketers, Cheeks?
Spaghetti armed, sort of vegan animal activists.
Look, it's no. I mean, I went to the first grade game this season. They asked me to, you know, hand out a couple of caps to some debutants down at Randwick Petersham, down at Coogee Oval, first grade. And I just want to give a bit of a shout out to David Warner. Look, you know, he's had a lot of time away. He had the toughest time over in England, as we all know. And he came back and he was having the first few games off, instructed to, which I'm still trying to get over. And he was going to be available for the first Shield game of the season. He didn't have to be there, but he was there at the warm-up. He was there at the warm-up, helping the guys warm up. And I just thought, wow. I had a little bit of a chat to him. And, you know, to see that, and I hope the listeners understand that there are two sides to what you see and what you don't see. Look, I've seen grade cricket change, and I couldn't believe that Western Suburbs won the toss and sent Randwick Petersham in on a belter. That was their first mistake. But then they opened the bowling with a left-arm orthodox and put a deep long on for the first ball. Now, I thought, the game has changed. Grade cricket has changed. Since when do you say to the opposition that we can't get you out, we're going to try and restrict you? Like, that's how much grade cricket has changed for me. And it's hard to comprehend that, because you just want to win it all at, you know, at all costs. But I think that players, teams now just want to chase because...
Well, the data suggests, you know, that that's what they're meant to do. And these days, data-driven insights are everything about cricket, and that's probably to the detriment of the sport.
If I could change one thing in grade cricket, I would say at the beginning of every match, you go out there and put the team under pressure and make them earn their first run. Just go out there and try and beat the opposition and, you know, and do it that way. But yeah, it was hard to watch.
That's fucking alpha. Richard Cheekway, it's an absolute pleasure having you in the studio. We thank you so much. You're an absolute gentleman. This has been a hugely anticipated podcast for not only for the three of us, but for tens of thousands of people out there across the world. So thank you very much for coming in. Pez, same for you as well, actually.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having
Dave,
me.
Dave, absolute pleasure. And I don't know, you guys are thinking the same thing for me. Thanks as ever to you guys listening out there in the Great Cricketer Podcast. 100th episode next week. Who are we going to get?
Don't know.
Cheeks, you want to come back?
Yeah. I'm available.
See you next week.